chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am grateful to have Frank DeAngelis on the show today. Frank is an author, speaker, and the retired principal of Columbine High School. Well, Frank, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so thrilled to have you as my guest today.
Well, it's such an honor and true blessing to be able to talk to you and listen to your work, and it's just fantastic and just it's very humbling to be able to talk to you.
Well, I feel the same way about you. So special shout out to our mutual friend, Tommy Spaulding, because if it had not been for Tommy, we may not have met one another, Frank. But, you know, you and I told you in a sidebar conversation, you've been such an inspiration to him and a mentor of sorts. And we talked about this every morning for 3 years now. You have sent him a text, an affirmation, or a Bible verse, or simply to say,
I love you.
I love you. I know. And it can be, and you've inspired me.
Wow.
Frank, ever since I heard that, you've inspired me because I've been doing that with my kids and my grandson. Just, you know, I don't need anything. I just wanted to let you know that I love you. And so, no wonder he considers you such an inspiration and a mentor to him.
Well, and Tommy does the same for me. He's been fantastic. And I can remember someone telling me once, it was a high school teacher way back when I was high school. And here we are, you know, 17 years old, getting ready to go out into the world. And he had us hold up our hand. And he said, I can guarantee you throughout your life, you're going to be able to count on one hand the number of people that you consider your true friends. And we're saying, no way, we have, you know, dozens and dozens of friends. But as I go through life, I realize that there's certain people that you're going to call in the middle of the night when you need someone or just someone to listen to you. And Tommy falls into that category.
Mm-hmm. And that is such a blessing, such a blessing. Well, here's what he says. He goes, Frank's secret Italian sauce is love. I love that, your secret Italian sauce. So that kind of is a great segue, because I want you to take me back to your childhood, because I know that you grew up in a large Italian-American Catholic family in North Denver. You have a younger brother and a younger sister, I think. But tell me about growing up. You had an idyllic childhood.
Oh, it was fantastic. And I was so blessed, and I am so fortunate that my parents just graduated. They just celebrated their 71st wedding anniversary. And it is just phenomenal of what I've learned from them. And many of the values I have today is because of my parents. And, you know, my dad was in the Korean War, and he was stationed here in Colorado, and that's when he met my mom. And so they were together, and they got married in Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church. And they had a wedding at Potenza Hall. That's where all the Italians had the receptions. And for me, I was baptized at Our Lady of Mount Carmel, confirmation. I received penance and things of that nature. And it's a dear parish of mine. It's a historical parish. And where I grew up in North Denver is it was really around the churches. You had Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which was the Italian Americans. Just a little bit to the south, you had St. Patrick's, the Irish Americans, and then you had Our Lady of Guadalupe in the Hispanic. And it was really around church. And many of the things that I have today, I owe, you know, to my parents, my family, but also to the nuns and the sisters and things that they instilled in me. And I think back to things that just resonate in my mind. And people said, I've been told this several times, that, boy, you really became a leader after Columbine. I said, well, I really believe that I developed leadership skills prior. And they said, what are you talking about? And I said, this sounds kind of crazy, but I can remember the first time Sister Mary Xavier was my fourth grade teacher. And all of a sudden she said, Frankie DeAngelis, you are going to lead us in the rosary. And here I am, and I'm sitting in church, and here's this little, you know, Italian kid along with all my Italian friends and leading. And I remember, I can do this. And I look at, you know, being in student council and things of that nature. And that's what I tell people when I talk about leadership. You just don't wake up and become this leader. It's been developed throughout your life in certain things. And many of the things that I learned from my parents and the teachers and the nuns and things really shaped me to who I am today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I love that. Well, I know that I read your mom and dad, they worked, right, until they were 86 and 83 years old, which I think is amazing. And you know what, Frank? My mom and dad did too. I mean, my dad had his own business. And when he was 84, he got rid of his business. He shut his business down because my mom got sick.
Yeah.
But he was a young 84-year-old. And I really do believe that it was because he continued to keep his mind engaged and his hands engaged. And
I agree wholeheartedly, because they both retired when they turned 65. And my siblings and I, we were concerned because of their mental ability. And it was really, they were depressed and things of that. And all of a sudden, they go back to work. And it was just like a whole different thing, because that's how they were raised, you know, and grew up during the Depression. And they learned to work hard. And it was something, and they instilled that on me. You know, you got to go to work, you got to go to work. And sometimes I think about it, when I retired, I had over 300 sick days. And the only time I really missed school is when I ended up in the hospital for a couple of weeks. But they instilled that you know, you can't let people down if you don't show up for work and things of that nature. And I look at some of it, things, and it's really funny. About 10 years ago, we were having a new home built. And so while our home was being built, my wife and I, my lovely wife, Diane, and I moved in with my parents. And within 24 hours, oh my goodness, Frank, I know why you are the way you are, you know? And I said, that's a good thing, you know? And so many of the things, and very organized, and grew up in a blue collar environment. And the first one to go to college, and we can talk a little bit about that, why I chose education, but I'm just really blessed.
Yes, for sure. Well, I know one other thing that I wanted to talk about from your childhood. You played a lot of basketball and football, yeah. And everything with a ball. And this is going to come in later as we continued with your story. But, you know, two friends, and you've already talked about Diane. I know there were two very special friends, Diane Wethington, who became your high school sweetheart. Then broke your heart when
yes,
you went
she
on to
did.
College. She broke your heart, but we're gonna come back around to her later. And then you had a best friend, Rick DeBell. And I think this is really funny. You went to college thinking you wanted to be an accountant.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, it was so funny. I love this story. And Ricky and I, we grew up together from the time we were 5 years old. And then he went to Wheat Ridge High School because they closed this Catholic schools in the Archdiocese. And so my parents couldn't afford me to send me to a Jesuit school or Franciscan brother. So ended up going from a school of about 400 to a school of 2,000. But Ricky and I stayed connected. So all of a sudden, we're getting ready to graduate in 1972. And he was going to be an attorney and I was going to be an accountant. And we had a family friend who was owned a CPA firm and said, once you get your degree, you know, you pass your exams, you have a job. And my parents were so happy. I was living at home. Things were good. And they said, you can stay here as long as you're not on the 10-year plan, you know, and that type of thing. But I go down, and like most of us, when we take those general study classes, you're saying, well, it's going to get better, you know, once you get into your area of study. And I was taking some beginning classes, but after that first year, I said, geez, I'm not sure if this is what I want to do. So I go back my second year, my sophomore year, and actually probably spent more time in a coffee shop than I did in classes. And said, this is not going well. And I go back a second semester of my sophomore year, can remember this so vividly. The cost accounting professor said, now you need to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. I said, no, we're not. I said, I am done after this year. So I go home and my parents, you know, they're disappointed because I was going to be the first one to go to college and earn that degree. But I went to work in an Italian grocery store in North Denver. And this was 1973. I was making $5.25 an hour. And, you know, and things worked out. They appointed me to frozen food manager. But I said, is this something I want to do the rest of my life? And I had a teacher and a coach, Mr. Dittman. And he said, please call me Chris. And I said, I can't. You're always going to be Mr. Dittman or Coach Dittman. And I said, I really think that I want to choose a profession I love. And I had an uncle, my uncle Vito, said to me one time, he said, Frankie, choose a job you love and you never have to work a day in your life. Love what you do and do what you love. Immediately, I think of Mr. Dittman. And I said, I want to be a teacher. And I could remember going home to my parents and said, Mom and Dad, guess what? I'm going back to school. Oh, Frankie, we're so proud of you. I'm going to be a teacher. We still love you. And I had friends say to me, why would you want to grow up in an area of poverty for the rest of your life? And they weren't too far off. My first job and only job at Columbine, I was teaching American history, some world history, coaching three sports, making $10,000. And I couldn't even afford a home. But what I tell people is when a kid comes up to you, and I just recently went to the 2014 10-year reunion because that was my last class, and then I went to the reunion of 1984, 40-year reunion, and these kids are, Mr. D, how you doing? Coach D, how you doing? My wife and I get invited to 8 or 9 weddings of former students every year. And you can't put a price tag on that. And because of that, you know, I am one of the richest people on the face of this earth. They're going to be my kids. And these kids that I call kids, you know, are celebrating their 60th birthday. And so it really is. I made the right choice. I chose a job I loved.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thanking Frank or Mr. D or Coach D. I'll call you Mr. D. I'm just thanking the ripple effect that you had. Really, like you said, you can't put a price on that. You're a rich man. You are a rich man because of all of those relationships with those kids and just the difference that you made in their life. Let me ask you this. So, because you did go to Columbine in 1979 and you were a social studies teacher, you know, a coach, athletic coach, you know, how did those years doing that really shape your leadership style, would you say?
It helped me greatly because I ended up being like a department person. I would serve on committees. But I'll tell you, my coaching background really helped me. And people are saying, how? Because I look at many of the decisions I had to make after Columbine was, how do you bring people together? You have unpredictable circumstances happening. How do you think? You know, it, one of the things that was so interesting when people would say, whenever you spoke, like at the beginning of the year faculty meeting, or whenever you spoke to groups, it was like us being in the locker room hearing a pep talk. And to me, one of the most important things, and I don't care what line of work you're in, whether you're family, it's all about relationships, relationships, relationships. And I think that is the most important thing. And I think one of the important messages is the reason I was able to lead us through Columbine is because of the 20 years prior of the relationships that I had with the kids, I had with the staff and the parents. And I can remember Mr. Dittman, my hero, telling me, he said, your life and your career is going to be determined by three things in the educational field. He said, you really have three stakeholder groups that you need to address. And he said, depending on the relationships that you have with those groups are going to determine your career. And he said, you know, if you get along with, you have a difficult time working with the three, he said, your career is going to be short-lived. But he said, each time that you have connect with these groups and you have these working relationships and it becomes a team, he said, if you're ever fortunate to get all three on board, he said, you're going to have a long, luxurious career. And that's exactly what happened. And I think just having all those. And so I had my critics after Columbine. I was named in 8 lawsuits, but I had those people that came forth and said, this is who Frank is. And just about, you know, who you are. And I think one of the things, and this is why I love Tommy's book, you know, Speaking from the Heart or Heart-Led Leaders. And I can remember people coming up to me afterwards and they said, Frank, we're going to have a speechwriter for you. We're going to do that. I said, no, because as soon as I get up there and someone else is telling me what to say, they're going to say, that is not Frank DeAngelis, you know, and I'm not the smartest, I'm not the tallest, but I speak from my heart. And that, I want to just share this story because I think it's important. I can remember probably about 15 years into my career, I had a mentor of mine, Ron Mitchell, and he came to me, he said, have you ever thought about being an administrator? And I literally said, why would I want to be one of them? Because I was afraid, and we all know these people, that all of a sudden they assume a leadership role, and people are saying, who is this person? You're not the person I worked with. Now this title has made you a different person. And so I was struggling. And so Susan Peters, who was a dear friend of mine, and we taught a class called American Studies, and she taught the American Lit piece, I taught the history piece. She said, Frank, your job is changing, but you don't have to change as a person. You always spoke from the heart, and you continue to do that. Just because your title is different does not mean you are different. And I lived by that, and it was so important. I think the best one of the many compliments that I received, but one that'll resonate with me for a long time, is when my staff stood up at my last faculty meeting, and they said, you never became one of them. You were always one of us. And we always had your back because we knew you had ours. And so that's important. Oh.
That's a great leadership lesson right there. A great leadership lesson. We're here as leaders to serve, right, Frank? It's not to be served. And so, yeah, I think as soon as we lose sight of that, I think that's when, you know, there's going to be trouble. But, you know, I loved it when you, because I read this, when you said, my greatest fear of becoming an administrator, getting into administration, is not being with the kids.
Oh, and I used to have staff members say, you're never in your office. And I said, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but if you need to talk to me, set up an appointment. They said, what are you talking about? Because I was a high school principal that loved cafeteria duty. I loved being in the hallways. And Tommy was amazed when he spent time with me at our school. It's the kids walking down the hall, and we had 2,000 kids. I knew their names. Or, hey, Mr. D, and this is high school, and kids are saying, hey, love you, Mr. D, and I love you so, and you create that atmosphere of love, and they're saying, that doesn't happen in high school. And we had kids that transferred from other schools that said, Mr. D, this is unique. I said, what are you talking about? This doesn't happen everywhere, because I think a lot of times, I was at Columbine for 35 years, assuming this is how it is everywhere. And it wasn't until afterwards when I left and started doing some speaking that I realized that this isn't what we had at Columbine was special and all about those relationships and things of that nature. And I truly believe that that's what brought us together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just sitting here thinking this is called something extra. There was something extra going on. Something extra going on at Columbine. Well, you know, I know that you became the principal in 1996, but, you know, can you just quickly, and I don't want to spend a lot of time here. I really want to talk about recovery and what you've done since. But, you know, I mean, you know, April 20th, 1999, I know that's going to be forever etched in everyone's minds. But, you know, what went through your mind when all of that the shooting started, you know, there? I mean, I think at first you thought that there was like some firecrackers or something, or, you know, didn't really realize what was happening, as nobody did really.
Well, a senior prank. And I do need to share this with you, Lisa, because there's a strong message I want to share with the people that are listening. Mr. Sanders and I, he was my mentor. And he came to Columbine in 77. I came in 79. We coached together. We were at each other's weddings. Our kids went to school together. And it was the day before, it was April 19th, and we're playing one of our arch rivals, Chatfield, in baseball. So we're both at the game. We're just laid back, sitting on the bleachers. And we have this conversation. And at the point, said, it didn't mean a whole lot. But we were talking about our lives and, you know, the 20 plus years we had been together. And he said, do you have any regrets? You know, there's times we're at school, we're away from our families and, you know, different types of things. And how do you balance professional and personal? And this deep, deep conversation goes on. And we're talking about our kids and, you know, and then we talk about all the things that we've been involved. And I can remember him saying so vividly, he said, you know, though, moving forward, I can't wait to spend more time with my grandkids. And he said, that's one of the things that is so important. I want to be there for my kids now that they're parents and their grandkids. And he asked me, and he said, Frank, do you have any regrets? Would you do it all? And I said, no, I would not. Well, every morning before school started, Mr. Sanders and I, he would come by my office, he'd have a cup of coffee. Well, the following morning, because, and I'll explain where I was prior, I wasn't at Columbine. And if I would have known the last conversation I had with Dave was in those bleachers, I would have hugged him and told him how much I loved him. And that's a lesson for all of us that, you know, with my wife and others, we try not to go to bed mad or leave mad because you don't know. And one of the things that the parents say to me that lost their loved ones, they said, if I knew when they left for school that morning, that was the last time I was going to see them, I would have hugged them and told them how much I loved. And we learned from that day on, there's no guarantees. And so getting back to your question, as I stated, I was at Columbine almost every morning. Well, we had some students, our Future Business Leaders of America, that were being recognized by the Chamber of Commerce. So they said, Mr. D, will you come and be with us? So I'm there. And as a result of that, I'm late getting back to Columbine. And the reason I'm sharing this is out of 175 days, 170 days, I was usually down in the cafeteria for our A lunch. We had two lunches, A lunch, B lunch, and I was down there to greet the kids and welcome them back or send them off to class. Well, that day, I'm looking for Kiki Leyba. And Kiki was a young man who student taught at Columbine. He was on a one-year contract, interviewed him, and I was going to welcome him to the Columbine family. Well, I couldn't find him. And all of a sudden, I'm getting ready to go downstairs, and he comes into my office, and he said, what's up, D? What's up? And to this day, we have this conversation. I'm not sure if I ever offered him the contract. He's still working at Columbine. But before I offered him the contract, my secretary comes running towards the door, and the door was shut, and she face-planted in this little window. And I knew something was wrong. And as she opened the door, she said, Frank, Mr. D, there's been a report of gunfire. And the first thing that crossed my mind, this has to be a senior prank. I could count on two hands a number of fist fights, and we're about a month away from graduation. And then all of a sudden, I come out of my office and I said, call 911, and Kiki goes one way and I go the other. And I went through something later I learned was fight, flight, and freeze, and everything slowed down for me. And all I could remember thinking is what it was going to feel like to have a bullet pierce my body, because as I'm looking down the hallway, there's a gunman coming towards me, and I remember so vividly what he was wearing with a baseball cap turned sideways, a black vest, white t-shirt, army boots on, and the barrel of the gun looked about the size of the cannon, and shots were being fired over my head. And I kept thinking, did I tell my family I love them? Will I not see my parents again? And it was so difficult as that is happening. And I thought I walked out very calmly, and Kiki Leyba said, I sprinted towards the gunman. And people said, why? One reason and one reason only. I had about 25 girls that were coming out of the locker room to go to a physical education class. And this was before all the drills the kids are doing now and grandkids, you know, all these lockdown drills. But I knew if I got the girls in the gymnasium, I would be able, there was an egress outside. Everything was going as planned. The girls were unaware. I get them in this little hallway, I pull on the door and it's locked. And the girl starts crying, Papa, Papa, save us. They start praying. I literally had 30 keys on a key ring. And the first key I stuck in the door, it opened it on the first try. I wouldn't be having this conversation. And people asked me, and I said I had very little to do in finding that key because 15 years after, I continued to stick that, try to reach in my pocket. I couldn't do it. And a couple of things I want to share that really still gets to me is a couple of years ago, I had a young lady, Katie was her name, and she was one of the girls with me. And we're at a Columbine softball game. They're playing in the state championship. And she's there, and she comes up, and we embrace, and we're hugging and crying. And all of a sudden, she spins me around and said, "Mr. D, I am so glad you found that key, because if you didn't, my daughter wouldn't be playing right field." And we just start crying. And with this past year being the 25-year remembrance, the kids, my kids, those girls that were with me sent me pictures of their families saying, "Mr. D, thank you. You found that key." And I had very little to do with it. God had a plan.
Amen. There's no way, because you said you had, it was a whole key ring of keys, right? You know, and for you to find just the one, I mean, there was definitely, you know, a higher power.
Yes, it wasn't
watching
my
after you, for sure. Well, Mr. D, we need to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Frank DeAngelis on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Frank DeAngelis. Frank, you know, what did you, 13 people lost their lives, 12 students, and Dave Sanders, your friend and teacher. You know, what did you do in the days after to guide the community, the school, through the healing and the recovery?
There's several things. And one of the things that I have to share with the audience is so many times when I go out and talk to people, they'll come up and say, "Frank, you know, we didn't lose 13. And I said, it's not a competition who suffered more. You know, hurt is hurt, pain is pain, trauma is trauma. And we need to come together. But one of the things that helped me is, I think in being in a leadership role, that you feel you have to be there for everyone else. And probably one of the most important phone calls I received was from a gentleman named John Fisher. My mom worked for him. He was a chiropractor, but more importantly, he was a Vietnam veteran. And he called me and he said, "Frank, I never got the help I needed. It cost me a marriage. It cost me a business. I'm struggling." He said, "You need to reach out." And so I immediately reached out to a counselor. And one of the things that happens, if I'm addressing a large group, and I think one of the things that everyone who's listening can identify with that we all went through was a pandemic, where we felt our life was out of control. Now, if I walked in to a group of teachers or people, family members or parents, and said, "You're screwed up, you better talk to someone," you're saying, "No one's telling me how I should feel." But it's how you deliver the message, the leadership style. And I said, "I don't know about you, but I'm not sleeping well. I'm having reoccurring nightmares. I don't know if this will help you, but it's going to help me." And all of a sudden, they're saying, "Geez, I thought I was the only one dealing with that." And then the other thing, cradle Catholic. And for the first time in my life, I was questioning my faith. And could not go back to my house that night. The FBI was concerned about the safety and welfare. So my car was impounded. My brother picked me up. He was at school with my dear friend, John Wassinger. And he was there and took me to the house to get a change of clothes. And I can remember sitting at my brother Anthony's house and Chanda, my sister-in-law, thinking, "God, how could you allow this to happen? How could you allow this to happen?" And I was struggling. And 2 days later, Father Ken Leone was a pastor where I had been for 20 years, and he said, "Please come down." I said, "Father, I have nothing." He said, "Please come down." he calls me up on the altar, and we're in the sanctuary, and there's about 1,200 people, and he calls me up on the altar, and many of my students who were part of the youth group were there. And then Tom Tonelli was one of those kids that I would send a Bible verse to every morning. He was there, and our eyes connected. And Father said, the Holy Spirit is going to descend upon you and make you stronger. And then he quoted later to me in Proverbs 16:9, he said, in his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. And he said, we have no idea why you were spared, but God's got a plan. And he said, you are going to fall, and each time you fall, he's going to reach out and pick you up. And there's going to be times even more tough than ever that you feel you can't go on and you can't even crawl. He's going to pick you up and carry you. And he said, now you need to go out and you need to help the people from Columbine recover and then help the rest of the country. And to this day, that's why 25 years later, I'm still reaching out to people. So my faith component was important. You know, and he shared something with me that I shared this today with someone. And he said, Frank, God is writing your story. Stop trying to steal the pen. And it made so much sense to me that he said, there's days that you're going to be able to do it. And that's the thing that I tell people during recovery. You don't have to travel the journey alone. So for me, it was counseling. And counseling is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. My faith. And then another thing that was important is working out the physical exercise. So I said, you need to find those things. And when I did that, it made a difference. And so I think those were the most important things. And then one final thing is we talk about being who you are. And Columbine didn't shape the person I was. And I can remember we could not go back to Columbine because the building was just destroyed. But we had to finish the school year. And people said, why didn't you go back into another school right away? And Chatfield High School opened their hearts and opened their doors to us. And they went to school in the morning, went in the afternoon. But we had 13 memorial services we had to go to. And I said, the last thing I wanted our kids and our staff to do is go to a memorial service and then go try to learn math and science. So we ended up going over to West Bowles Community Church, and the staff would meet there every day, and we would have so much support for them, but we also had to have support for our kids while they were no longer in session for a couple of weeks. And I can remember it was the Thursday morning before I went down to St. Francis Cabrini. Counselor comes up and says, your kids need to see you. And I said, I have nothing to give. The last person they want to see now is me. I said, I haven't eaten. I haven't slept. They said, please come with us. So I walk into this auditorium, it's packed, there's over 1,000 kids, and they start chanting, we love you, Mr. D, we love you, Mr. D, we're Columbine. Well, I lose it, and I literally turn away from them, and my body is shaking, the counselor spins me around, and he said, Frank, what do you see? And I said, I apologize, I am so sorry. He said, you don't understand. He said, for the past 48 hours, these kids didn't know what to feel, and by you crying, you gave them permission that it was okay to feel this. And even later, it's all right for you to smile. It's okay. And I love this quote, character and integrity is who you are when no one's watching. And so yeah. I have people that I said, they get up and say one thing and then you watch their action. And I had someone that day said, Frank, we've heard you speak and share your message, but a word was not uttered out of your mouth. But your actions spoke more loudly than anything you could have possibly said.
Oh, that is beautiful. Isn't that the truth? Your actions. Wow. Well, Frank, one of the things that I, you know, just think is just so wonderful is you vowed to stay. You vowed to stay at Columbine because a lot of people would have said, I'm out of here. You know, I can't deal with this. I'm going to go be an accountant now. Or whatever, right? But you vowed to stay until the last students affected by the shooting had graduated, which I think would have been 2012. But yeah. Then you ended up staying even farther beyond that, and you didn't retire until 2014. But I love, like, you know, how you honored. I know that you shut down the school on that day every year on the 20th to honor the lives that were lost. But you know, I read, you've already talked about, I think it was the young man, was it Tommy, that Tonelli, what was his first name that became
Tom Tenelli.
Yeah, Tom Tenelli. Yeah. You know, I think it was he that said, you would always say, be a good student, be a good athlete, but above all, be a good human.
Yes.
And a good person, you know. But I read many of the things that were said about you, and you know, another student said, what we appreciated the most about you was how you treated them and how you loved them. This might have been Tom, that you were more of a father to him than his own father. Not sure that was Tom.
Oh, and that was another young man, Kelvin, and he came up to me my last day and he gave me this hug, and it was a tough day because all these kids are coming up and saying, I love you and love you and the whole thing. And he said, you were more of a father figure than my dad ever was. And it's things like that that made it all worthwhile when I made that decision to become a teacher.
Yes, I love it. I love it. I'm so glad you did. I'm so glad you did, because the ripple effect, you may not know this side of eternity, well, Frank. You know, but you did retire in 2014, and now this is what I want to talk about. Now you've been working with other schools and communities that have been impacted by violence. You know, how has this really shaped your mission and your purpose since retirement? Because a lot of times people retire and then they lose a purpose, but you've got purpose still. You're still out there helping.
Well, I say this jokingly, I'm failing retirement. And every time I need to cut back, and I know, I mean, Tommy travels around the world, and now Tommy's much younger, but, you know, I think it was the year before the pandemic, I had 49 trips, and I just said, I can't, you know. When the pandemic happened, things slowed down, and I did some virtual things, but I remember it was within 3 days after Columbine, April 20th of 99, I received a phone call from a gentleman named Bill Bond. And he was the principal at Heath High School in Paducah, where there was a school shooting. And I think the date was December 7th it was 1997. And he called me up and he said, Frank, you don't even know what you need, but here's my number. And I kept that number. And I mean, I remember, well, what do you do going back into school? What do you do when you're starting a new school year? What do you do for prom? What do you do? And I kept thinking in the back of my mind, I said, I hope our kids and Mr. Sanders didn't die in vain. I hope I never have to make that phone call again. Well, unfortunately, since 1999, I've had to make that phone call. I can't tell you how many times. And it's not because it's Frank D'Angelo. It's because when I call up and say, I know what you're feeling, they're saying, oh my gosh, you really do. And it was just within 2018, I'm a member of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. And Bill Waples called and he said, Frank, I want to start something called the Principals Recovery Network. Would you like to head it up? And so we did that. And I can remember that we met in Washington, D.C., and we meet with legislators. And then it was in 2022, 21 principals and superintendents came from around the country, and we spent a couple of days in the Columbine community, went to the school, and I shared my story. And then we did a release at the Columbine Memorial called the Principal's Recovery Guide. And it talks about, and it's free to everyone that wants to just reach out. What do you do after an event happens in your community? And, you know, what about the first graduation? What about going back into the building? And so it's continuing to help. And just recently, unfortunately, and talk about counseling and the importance. It's been a tough year for me, and I go into my counselor at least once a year. Well, I go into my counselor, and I'm getting double dosed, because not only is he my grief counselor, but he's a strong spiritual leader, and he gives me both. So I go in, and I'm feeling really good. I said, thank you. Thank God. We prayed the whole thing. I come down the elevator, I sit there, and all of a sudden my phone starts. You're in my thoughts and prayers, thinking of you, and the media starts calling, and that's when the shooting occurred at Appalachie. And I'm just saying, God, I'm so sorry to hear this, but thank you for giving me the strength. And so immediately reaching out to some of the teachers that are struggling, just to tell them that you're not in this journey alone. And I said, you can't worry about a year from now, let's take it day by day. And I coined the phrase, it's a marathon and not a sprint. And I'm going to be with you every step of the way.
Mm. Mm. Wow. Well, let's talk about this, because in 2019, and I already showed you, you published a book. They call me Mr. D. Some of the students call you Coach D, right? They call me Mr. D, The Story of Columbine's Heart, Resilience, and Recovery. And the foreword was written by our dear friend, Tommy Spaulding. And Tommy said that you transformed the legacy of Columbine, Frank, with one word. And that's love. You know, it's really a powerful, powerful book. I hope our readers will go out and get the book. But when you wrote that book, what were your hopes that readers would take from the book?
I'll tell you, it was tough. I can remember right after Columbine happened, people started approaching me about writing a book. And I even remember getting a phone call from Howard Stern's that wanted to write a book. And I'm saying, the last thing on my mind is writing a book. The last thing on my mind is doing public speaking. Now, I did public speaking, or I went out and helped, like at Sandy Hook, Virginia Tech, and these other places, but I didn't start this whole other career until I retired. And so all of a sudden, I get ready to retire, and a good friend of mine, the co-author, Terry Fry, we competed against each other in baseball, and he went to Wheat Ridge High School. I went to Ranham. And he, right after Columbine, he said, would you think of writing a book? And I said, that's the last thing on my mind. I got to rebuild this community. So 2014 comes, or a year, and I said, let's go to lunch. And I said, are you still interested in writing this book? And he said, I am. Now, one of the things that's very difficult is we had some publishers that said, Frank, this whole bit about you growing up and your family and your friends, and that's not, people don't want to see that. That may not sell books. And I said, I am willing to sacrifice the sale of books for me to thank all these people that made me who I am today. And it did. Amen. I mean, if I would have went with a different publisher and left all that out, it's not about the dollar and cents. It's about me saying, Mom and Dad, thank you. Aunt Florence and Uncle Vito, thank you. My brother and sister, thank you. That was more important to me, to share that message. And that's who I am. Mm-hmm. And all the proceeds from it go to the Columbine Memorial Fund or the Academic Foundation, or it goes to a training center. And it was important because I could not thank all the people who helped shape me who I am. And that's what those chapters are all about. And that's why I asked Tommy. He had a major impact on my life. And I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, because I am who I am is because of all these people that were in my life. And they didn't just become a part of my life after April 20th, 1999.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that, tell me about the, is that the DeAngelis Center Foundation and the mission for that? I mean, does the program go to that? Okay, got it.
Yeah, they have a training center, and it is so difficult. I had some friends, and I've had friends since I was 5 years old with them, and they said, the only thing we thought be mailed out or named after you was a porta potty, you know. And so, you know, we have this running joke and the whole thing, but there's a facility called the Frank DeAngelis Center for Community Safety. And we have at that center over 170,000 people trained, law enforcement. We've had Navy SEAL, we have chaplains, firefighters. And it's, so it's a way to train people to deal with everything similar to what happened at Columbine. And because we have changed things, and I look at the protocol that we had in place back then compared to where we have it now, and people say to me, they said, Frank, you continue to speak out, but these shootings continue. These devastation events happen, but how many have been stopped because of things we're doing differently now? And I am the type of person, and people are saying, he can't be like this, but if you talk to anyone that knows me, and Tommy knows this, that I don't dwell on the negative, I build on the positive. And I say this, and to some people, when I go out and speak, I said, we spend 5% of the time dealing with 90% of the people we're never going to change. And to me, that's wasted energy. And I'm looking for energy givers, not energy takers. And I'm not going to be disrespectful saying I'm not talking to you, but I want to surround myself with people, and that we can move ahead positively. And what I tell people, you can't determine what happens to you, but you can determine your response. And I think that's important. And I think that's, you know, the message. And when I go out and I tell people, Columbine, it's been 25 years and we are a stronger community today than what we were prior, because that's what happens when people go through devastation. They come together as a family. And I think back, the last time our country came together was 9/11, because yes, the enemy, and it didn't matter Republican or Democrat. And I want to share one thing with you, and I promise I'll be quiet. But one of the things, I recently testified in front of the Oversight Committee. Congressperson Raskins from Maryland asked me to testify. And there were senators there and there were representatives. And so my closing statement, I told my wife, you may have to come and bail me out of jail. But my comment, I said, you know, it was 25 years ago, I lost my beloved 13, and I recited their names, Cassie Bernal, Stephen Kernow, Corey DePooter, Kelly Fleming, Matt Kechter, Daniel Mauser, Danny Rohrbaugh, Dave Sanders, Rachel Scott, Isaiah Scholes, John Tomlin, Lauren Townsend, and Kyle Velasquez. And I said, 25 plus years ago, when I had to go to those memorial services and watch those kids lying in caskets, I said, I didn't see a Democratic sticker on the casket. I didn't see a Republican sticker on the casket. I didn't see a blue casket or a red casket or a purple casket. We need to come together to keep our kids safe and sound. And I made that statement, and Educational Weekly picked it up and they quoted, and it made a point to both sides, because we've got to do everything in our power that's going to keep our kids safe. And I, as I stated earlier when we started this wonderful dialogue, is I'm going to be 70 years old October 15th. And if my parents had to bury me, it's still tough because I'm their kid. And yes, I think that is so important, that we have to do everything to keep our kids safe, our grandkids safe, and great-grandkids. And we've got to come together as one.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more, Frank. And Diane didn't have to come bail you out of jail.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Well, speaking of Diane, I want to come back to her, because you went off to college and she said, hey, I want to have fun my senior year. And she... You said she broke your heart. Everybody was devastated, because your whole family thought, you know, you guys. But tell me the story, because she came back into your life. And
it's wonderful. Well, into her behalf, I give her credit, because she would tease me that, oh, you're a possessive Italian. And I had all these plans. And my mom, we gave her a hope chest with all these things. And it was all planned out what we were going to do. And she said, I don't want that right now. And my parents loved her so much. As a matter of fact, when she got married, my parents went to her wedding. And so, but we ended up, and we, you know, even though we lived in Colorado, we never stayed in touch. Well, I was, it was after Columbine, I had been married 18 years. And all of a sudden, my wife at the time comes home and said, you're not the man I married. And she served me with divorce papers. And so I was devastated. And this was in 2002. Well, back in 1999, I received these cards and letters from people from around the country, around the world. And most were good, but there were some that said, you know, you killed those kids. How do you live with yourself? You should die. And I mean, it was tough. And my counselor said, Frank, the last thing you need right now is to read those. Put them aside. A time will come. So we fast forward, it's in February, or in, actually the end of January, my wife just served me with papers for a divorce. So I'm at the house, I start pulling cards out. And one of the first cards I pulled out was from my high school sweetheart. And how the Lord works in mysterious ways. And she sent that to me in April of 99. Well, now we have everybody's phone number put into our phone. So you just hit that. I remember that number from calling it so many times. And I said, Mrs. Wethington, this is Frankie DeAngelis. And I feel badly because Diane sent me a card. And she sent in the card. I don't know if you remember. I'm saying, you got to be kidding me. The love of my life. And I said, is there any chance you can give me her number so I can call her to personally? She said, Frank, with all due respect, I respect you, but I can't do that. Let me give her your number. She called me, and we've been together now for 22 years.
And such a beautiful story.
Oh, it's great. And it's so funny because we have our prom picture together, and she has been there every step of the way. And the Lord works in mysterious ways, and it's fantastic.
Yes. Oh, such a beautiful story. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Frank, this is called Something Extra.
Okay.
And I know that you've learned a few things in your life with your experiences, but what would you say is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think every leader needs that in order to lead, you can't lead by fear. You can't tell someone you will do it because I'm your boss. And you need to treat people the way you want to be treated. And people would say to me is, I can't believe you can treat people like that. And they still come back in things. And I remember getting a call from the teachers union and they said, we need to meet. And I said, sure, what do you want to do? And they said, you got to quit treating your teachers so well. And I said, what are you talking? Because we can't get people to join the union. And I said, that is not going to happen. You treat people the way you want to be treated. And I did the same thing with my students. When I had to, if I had to suspend them, they knew I was suspending them because of the act, not because of who they were. And I would call them to check in when they came back. And it's that thing. It's about relationships. And I think when you got to put it up there that I am your boss, I'm stopping. And I can remember people telling me, you're going to have a special parking spot because you're the principal. No. And people would say to me, and even kids came up to me, and they said, Mr. D, you're the principal of this high school, and you're pushing around a broom cleaning the cafeteria. Why? Because to me, I want a place that is clean for my students. Now, all of a sudden, I don't have to tell my students, pick this up. They're saying, if the principal's doing it, we're going to do it. And you lead by example. And that's the most important thing. And I love this quote, and I show it on a picture, and it was by Winston Churchill. Diplomacy is telling someone to go to hell that they look forward to the trip. It's how you treat the people. And, you know, and even when I had these situations that I had to discipline, when they walked out of the office, they knew it was about the action, but not about them, that I cared about them and I loved them. And that word love, love, love is so important. And Tommy said, Frankie, I cannot believe walking down the halls of Columbine High School, these are high school kids saying, I love you to each other and to you. And that's the environment you have, because during the tough times, love needs to get us through it all. Love, love.
Yeah. Faith, hope, and love.
Yes.
Frank, the greatest of these is love. And that comes from the master, master teacher.
Well, and it's so funny you should say that. I just recently, and I officiate weddings for family members. And I've been asked to do it for some of the students. I said, well, once I do it for one of my students, I'll be a full-time minister. But I was just in Minnesota and officiated and did Corinthians 4:7. And just basically what you said, the greatest is love. And don't underestimate the power of love. And it just helps us get through. And love during the good times and the bad times, love is so important.
Mm-hmm. Could not agree more. Well, Frank, this has been a heart podcast for me. I feel like I've been fighting back tears the whole entire time, but I am so grateful to you for making the time.
I am honored. And we talk about this in our faith, and God brings us together for a reason. And this is a true blessing. I didn't know the questions, but it was just like we've been friends forever, and I love carrying on this dialogue, and You know, like I said, there's people that you probably interviewed much smarter than I, but I just speak from the heart, and I'm never going to change, and I'm going to take it to the grave with me. What you see is what you get.
I love it. I love it. Well, you're just the kind of person I want to be around. So thank you again, Frank.
Thank you, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.